Blog Talk Radio.
All right, fans, here we go. 4 2-minute rounds of boxing scheduled. Women's in the ring.
Greetings, my fans, to another edition here of the 2-Minute Round on the Living in the Ring Network, your hooks and jabs look at the female fight world. With I am Felipe Leon, and with me, always, my co-host, David Avila. David, how are you doing tonight?
Good, Felipe. How are you?
Good. Feeling pretty good on this April evening. Unfortunately, for the second show running, but she should be coming back pretty soon, is our third co-host, Elena Baby Doll Reed, who, because of family matters, can't be with us, but she should be coming back soon enough. But this week, we have a very, very special guest exclusively calling in about 15 minutes. We're going to have none other than the veteran, Layla MacArthur, recently signed to Mayweather Promotions and looking for a big, big fight. She's going to be calling in about 15 minutes to give us her thoughts on everything that is going on with female boxing this year and what is coming up for her soon. Hopefully it'll be something that we all will be waiting for. But before we head into that, let's go into our rundown of all the fight results from the last couple of weeks. And then obviously we have our female fight chatter and our upcoming calendar, which is a little light this week, David. The 2-minute round, we have it every other week, every other Thursday here on the Living in the Ring Network. Our next show is scheduled for April 27th. And if you want to give us a call and talk about female boxing, you can do so at 347-215-7598. Again, the number is 347-215-7598. So getting started from on Friday, March 31st, in Parque Central San Jose, Costa Rica, Yocasta Valle remained undefeated and scored a unanimous decision over Yalitza Perez of Venezuela in a 10-rounder to capture the atomweight 102-pound strawweight title for the IBF. Scores there were 100-90, 192, and 99-91. I don't know if you had a chance to see this young woman box, David, Yocasta Valle. She seems to have a little bit of skill. She's tall for her weight class, thin, long, and a very beautiful woman. And, you know, here on the 2-minute round, we don't really go by looks. I mean, we try to treat the women and the female boxers as what they are, which are fighters. But this woman, like many, is very, very beautiful. And hopefully she gets to fight out of Costa Rica soon. And now that she's the IBF 102-pound champion, maybe we'll get to see that somewhat soon. The same night on Friday, March 31st, but from Haiti, Melissa Saint-Ville scored a technical decision over Mexican Jessica Gonzalez in defending her WBC silver 130-pound title. There was an accidental head clash, and they went to the scorecards after Gonzalez was unable to continue. I think it was in the fifth round, and Saint-Ville was declared the winner. Now, after that fight,
I think it was a draw.
It was a draw?
Yeah, it was a technical draw.
Okay, my bad. So it was a technical draw after that accidental head clash where Gonzalez was not able to continue. And now it's actually being reported by BoxRec that Melissa Saint-Ville is actually going to travel to Europe and challenge for the WBC champ. She's the silver champion. So now she's going to travel on May 6th to Finland to challenge the actual champion, Eva Wallstrom, on May 6th. What kind of chance do you think she has of coming home with that title, David?
Well, Melissa is a very aggressive fighter. She can actually fight any way. She has the skill, she has the speed, and she's very aggressive. She doesn't wait for things to happen. She makes things happen. I've seen her spar several times with Melinda Cooper, and she's pretty... She likes to fight. That's what it is. She really likes what she's doing.
Well, she's going to have to use that aggressiveness in Finland because she's going to be in the hometown of the world champion. And so hopefully that helps her out in coming home with the full-fledged WBC title on May 6th. The same night, a little bit of an upset in South Africa when veteran Alicia Graf was defeated via unanimous decision by local Bukiwe Nonina in a 10-rounder for the vacant WBF Bantamweight title. Scores there were a close 96-94 two times and 96-93. Alicia Graf, 36 years old, 3-3 in her last six fights. Do you think this is the end of her career, David? Because, I mean, losing in South Africa to a complete unknown is pretty tough pill to swallow.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the other girl is pretty good, but from what I saw of Alicia Graf, her previous fight, she's pretty good. I mean, she knows what she's doing. I just think it's it might have been a hometown decision. I can't really say. I didn't see the fight, but from what I saw before that fight, Alicia Graf's pretty good. She's still, in my estimation, she can still fight.
Well, let's see what she does because she is three. Like I mentioned, she is 3-3 in her last six fights. She hasn't really been fighting much per se. You know, she's one of those names that, you know, kind of when it was a little bit more of a heyday, even though we're kind of like, it looks like we're going into a little bit of a heyday now. But, you know, maybe in the mid-2000s, she was a name that was being mentioned a lot as one of the best in the world. I mean, she's faced everybody from Alicia Ashley to Susie Ramadan, Ana Maria Torres, Jasmine Rivas, Selena Munoz. Yeah. She faced them all, but she has really been fighting sporadically lately. In 2014, she fought twice, dropping two fights, one to Selena Munoz and one to Jasmine Rivas. In 2015, she only fought once, beating Mariana Gullias in Germany. In 2016, she fought twice, beating Noemi Bosques in China and Cleopatra Tolnai in Germany. And this fight against Bukiwe Nonina, who was only 10-3 with one draw, it was her first fight of 2017, and she ended up dropping the unanimous decision. So let's see if she decides to continue, being that she's now 36 years old and fighting very sporadically in the last two or three years. Moving on to Saturday, April 1st, from Germany, Christina Hammer stayed undefeated while defending her WBC and WBO middleweight titles over Maria Lindberg. It was a rematch. She had beaten her before. Scores there were dominated 100-90 times. I didn't see a stream for this one. Did you catch a stream for this one, David?
No, I wasn't able to.
No, I didn't see one either. But the same night, there was a historic night, at least for Mexico, but for all female boxing as well, when from the Zócalo, which is the main square in Mexico City, one of the biggest cities in the world, Promociones del Pueblo on Televisa, the biggest channel, the biggest Mexican network, gave us Mariana Juarez, the Barbie Juarez, the veteran, a friend of the show, capturing her third world title in as many divisions, with the unanimous decision over the previous champion, Catherine Fitti. Scores there were 99-90, 97-92, and 97-92. We got to see this fight. David, give us your thoughts on Mariana's performance.
Well, I thought Mariana, I mean, once again, she surprised everybody because when you count her, you think she's going down, she just rises up. She just always seems to rise to the occasion. And in this case, she just seemed to have her number. I mean, she just seemed to be able to hit Fitti what she wanted to and evade the fast blows from the African fighter when she came into. And then by the second half of the fight, it seemed to me that Catherine Fitti started running out of gas at the end of each round. She would, like the last 40 seconds, she seemed to slow down. I don't know if it was an optical illusion, but that's what it seemed like to me.
So I could have been the altitude as well. You got to remember that they were fighting in Mexico City, what is the hometown of Mariana Juarez, whereas Catherine Fitti was coming in from Africa. So it might have been the altitude as well that might have, played a part there.
Yeah, that and Mariana's skill, because she was doing exactly what she needed to do.
Yeah, I was pretty impressed. You know, I was one of the people who on the last show kind of had my doubts about Mariana Juarez because I had seen her fight in this weight class. You know, this was her third fight at bantamweight, her first fight against Daniela Bermudez, the Argentinian. She didn't fare too well. She won her second fight against fellow Mexican Irma Garcia, and now she was in third fight, but she was fighting a very strong bantamweight champion in Catherine Fiddy, the same Catherine Fiddy that was able to really, in my view, easily defeat Jasmine Rivas, even though the fight got stopped midway through the bout because of an accidental headbutt, and it went into the cards, and she ended up winning the title through a technical decision. So I thought that maybe she was going to be too quick and too strong for Mariana Juarez, but Mariana Juarez was able to show her experience. She was able to outbox Catherine Fiddy. Catherine Fiddy, you know, the better boxer inside the ring was Mariana Juarez, and she was able to use that and outbox her and never really engage with Catherine Fiddy. She did go toe-to-toe with her a couple times, but most of the time, Mariana stick to the game plan and outbox her from the outside, and it proved to frustrate Catherine Fiddy. To a certain point, I thought Catherine Fiddy really didn't have any other answers, while Mariana was really, in the second half, kind of, or even in the last third of the fight, kind of was in complete control of the action. And, you know, she ended up not only shutting me up, but shutting a lot of people up and making history, becoming the first Mexican female fighter to win three titles in as many divisions. So that's a very historic night for boxing. Now, the word on the street is that they are very serious. There are very serious talks in making a fight between her and Jackie Nava pretty soon. So Jackie Nava has actually gone on record to say that, you know, she's looking to retire fairly quickly, maybe by the end of this year. So I think they want to cash her out one way or the other by having her face one of the most popular Mexican fighters of all time, who is Mariana Juarez. But now I guess it's just a matter of finding the right weight. You know, Jackie Nava has been competing at 122 pounds for quite a while now. And Barbie Juarez is obviously just coming up to the bantamweight division after campaigning at flyweight and super flyweight. So now it's just a matter of seeing if they can come to terms, not only with the money, but I would guess with the weight as well. Right, David?
Yeah, that's an important factor. They got to find some kind of catch weight. And as Mariana mentioned when she was on her show, a catch weight seems to be the way to make this fight.
Yeah, but Mariana on our show and interviews, she has mentioned that she's very open to it, and she really wants that fight. She knows that she wants to go down in history as one of the best female fighters of all time, is not one of the best Mexican female fighters. And by beating Jackie Nava, it would really cement her name in the history books.
Yeah, absolutely. That really would. There would be no doubt.
Yeah. The same night we saw the return of WBC heavyweight champion Alejandra Jimenez making her first defense of that title that she beat Marta Salazar of the Bay Area from. And she ended up scoring the first round technical knockout over the overmatched Carlette Ewell in a Schedule 10 rounder on the same card at the Zocalo. That was a pretty devastating knockout. She landed a hard right hand to the temple of Ewell. Ewell went down. She tried to beat the count, but just wasn't able to. And they ended up stopping the fight, giving Jimenez the first round TKO. Did you see that knockout, David?
Yeah, I saw also that Carlette twisted her ankles in the seam of the mat, and it was ugly. It was ugly.
Yeah.
There was no way she was going to get up. No way.
Yeah,
her leg was twisted around. I said, man, that is ugly. That was a freak accident.
Yeah, that was bad.
The knockdown
was
not, but the ankle was weird.
Yeah, and that didn't help her in gain up. And just to finish off the results from that Mexico City card held on April 1st, Yasmin Gonzalez, the niece of multiple champion Johnny Gonzalez scored a unanimous decision over Sonia Osorio in a six-rounder at flyweight. Scores there were 59-55 three times. And this Jasmine Gonzalez is starting to bring up her name. She first defeated, what was her name? Arroyo. Her last name is Arroyo. I forgot her name. She was a interim WBA flyweight champion. She was coming back from being off for a little bit, and they put her up against this Jasmine Gonzalez, and she ended up beating her live on the Azteca channel some months ago. She gets her second shot on TV, and she beat a pretty good fighter in Sonia Osorio. Sonia Osorio coming from actually challenging for the WBF flyweight title last December against Isabel Millan, and, you know, putting in a pretty good effort in that fight. And now she's facing Jasmine Gonzalez, and Jasmine Gonzalez ended up beating her via unanimous decision in the sixth rounder. The one I was speaking about is Jocelyn Arroyo. She's from Guadalajara, and she was the interim WBA champion. But on the line with us now, I'm going to patch her in, is none other than our special guest, Layla MacArthur.
Hey, Layla, guys. How's it going?
Hey, Layla, how you doing? Thank you for calling here the two-minute round on the Leave It in the Ring Network. You're hooked in Jazz Lucas, the female fight world. Thank you for being with us. We appreciate your time. My name is Felipe León, and I want to pass the baton to your friend and mine, David Avila.
Thank
Layla,
you.
Layla, how are you?
I'm good, David. How are you?
Good, good. Are you in training right now?
Oh, yeah. We're training hard, you know, twice a day. We're in camp now, and just over 2 weeks till fight time. So, yep.
Who is going to be your opponent? Let the audience know who you're going to be fighting next and where.
Well, we went through a lot of confusion with the opponents. The fight is set for the 29th of this month, and we had some difficulty getting somebody that the commission would approve. So, you know, searching far and wide, we tried with Mary McGee. For some reason, they turned her down. She's 23-3, rated number 5. I don't understand why, you know, he would turn that down, but that's how.
What do you say? Who is turning it down?
Yeah. Bennett, the director of the Athletic Commission in Nevada. And
okay.
Mary McGee, you know, she's a good fighter. She's from Ohio, tough girl. Never been stopped, and her only losses were to champions in their own countries and towns. You know, she lost to Farias in Argentina, Holly Holm in Albuquerque. So I don't understand that decision, but, you know, we kept submitting other opponents, and the only one we ended up with, big surprise, is Melissa Hernandez again.
Wow, that's
so
amazing.
That's who we're going to fight on the 29th, apparently. You know,
well,
I would have liked to fight somebody else, you know, but you know, every time when Melissa and I fight, it's a good fight, so it's entertaining, you know, I guess. So that's how it's going to go on the 29th.
Well, I wonder did they give you any reason for being against Mary McGee?
Does it what? He said that she had never beat anybody good, so.
Hmm.
You know, nobody big, and, you know, but she hadn't lost. Yeah, apparently so. Doesn't make any sense. You know, he doesn't work for the TV. He's not a promoter, but, you know, that's how the commission is run right now. So, we got to just work with it and do the best we can.
Yeah. And where exactly is the venue going to be at?
It's Sam's Town right now in Las Vegas, Nevada. I believe it's Sam's Town Casino.
Okay.
There were, that's where it should be.
Oh, okay, great, great. Is there
It'll be
on television?
Fox, yeah, I think it's on Fox TV. They have Al Heyman's fighters, two 10-round fighters at least, and myself is a 10-round. I think they're showing 4 fights, so mine should be televised as well.
Oh, great, great.
Yeah.
So, Layla, a lot of people who don't know about female boxing, and even those that do know about female boxing, they're unaware of this entanglement between you and Cecilia Breakers.
Yeah.
A lot of people say you're the best female fighter pound for pound. A lot of people say Cecilia Breakers is the best fighter pound for pound. But tell us what's happening with that. between you?
Well, I mean, you know, pound for pound is very subjective. A lot of people, you know, put a lot of stock in the wrong ratings. But I think that you can't be the pound for pound greatest if you haven't proven yourself and stepped out of your comfort zone, out of your home, to go and fight the best that are there. You know, for the last 2 years, I've been rated number one at welterweight consistently, and brackets has chosen to fight the number three, the number two, you know, sometimes lower on the scale. You know, I get it. She makes the same money whether she fights me or somebody else. She's got the TV in Europe, and so I understand her decision. I mean, who wants to get beat and embarrassed? But, you know, at some point you have to step up and prove if you think you're the best that you are. And she hasn't made it to that point yet, and I've consistently done that in my career and proven it. So that's the difference. And, you know, I don't know if she'll ever fight me. I really don't know. But I'm going to continue to stay number one at the welterweight as long as I can and hope to push that match with Showtime. They've expressed interest in televising that fight this year. So hopefully that happens.
You've been fighting as a welterweight now, but a lot of people don't know that you really started what, at featherweight or junior featherweight?
Yeah, featherweight and super featherweight. Generally, I've even fought as low as 122 in my career over the span of almost 20 years. But right now, I'm comfortable around 140. You know, super lightweight, but I'm willing to fight anybody in the welterweight and above. Just, you know, wherever the best fights are, that's where I go.
What do you think about what's going on in women's boxing this year? Is it encouraging you or is it the same old thing?
You know, I'm sitting back to see what happens. I see some signs of positive things happening in women's boxing, but it hasn't come to full fruition yet. So I would like to see what happens this year. I think, you know, when the pay gets better and the TV exposure, you know, gets better, then I'll believe, you know. But right now I'm watching and there's a lot of positive signs. So, you know, I'm hopeful for this year. It might be the year of women's boxing again.
So what about when Mayweather Promotions signed you? What was that like? What was that feeling?
Well, you know, a lot of people look at signing with a promoter as like, you know, you've won the lottery. But in my career, I've done everything with Luis Tapia. You know, he made my career. We did everything on our own, as you know, all these years and, you know, the hard way. So to sign with a promoter makes sense at this point, and I hope that we can do great things together. But, you know, I'm waiting to see where we go from here. You know, I'm willing to do my part, and I know they're willing to put some effort in too. So good things might come from this partnership. I really am hopeful for that.
You've had so many great fights against so many really good fighters. What are some of the key fights that you remember, Leila?
Trilogy with Jelena Marjanovic has to be one of the ones that really stick in my mind because it was such a dramatic trilogy in that I beat her when she was undefeated in Edmonton, Canada. I came back a few months later determined to knock her out, and instead I ended up breaking my forearm on her head, and then I lost the decision. So we were 1-1, and it took me 3 years to get that final match, and, you know, and I was able to pull that victory defending my WBA lightweight title to her, who was currently a WBC champion. So that was probably one of the sweetest victories in my career. I mean, definitely one of the sweetest. Also South Africa, you know, fighting in the hometown of Noni Tenge. And we were able to come away with the knockout and the WBA super welterweight title by eighth round knockout. That was really incredible moment, too.
When you fought Noni Tenge, I mean, she was a lot taller than you. In fact, didn't you have problems making weight? I mean, you actually had to add weight to make that fight.
Absolutely. It wasn't ideal, her weight, her size, but I did have the experience edge, and I know that that would carry me. It was a bit awkward to start out. That's why it took me till the eighth round to get something done, but it was pretty awkward as a fight. You know, but then I caught her with the left hook, and the rest was history.
Yeah,
it's awkward fighting big people, but yeah. you know, it only counts if they hit you.
What about your excursion into the to that pit?
The BKB.
When you fought
Diana Prazik
from Australia. Yeah.
From Australia, yeah. Diana Prazik was the WBC super featherweight champion at the time, 130. And we fought in the pit, as they call it in the BKB, for the first and only female title fight. And that was a great experience and a great exposure in my career. You know, we fought on pay-per-view. You know, it was kind of a neat format. And it was one of my best performances that I felt that I did what Layla McCarter is supposed to do. You know, I displayed some boxing and you know, everything we've been training to do all these years, and I felt that I expressed it in the pit. So it felt good, yeah.
What was it like not fighting with ropes? You couldn't lean on anything. I mean, it was actually
right.
Like a little divot where you could fall backwards.
It's kind of awkward, yeah. If you get too close to the edge, you know, you can easily trip on the edge of the pit. There's like about a half a foot barrier before it slopes up. And if you're not careful, you could get hit at the same time as you're slipping on that, and it's a knockdown no matter what. So you just have to be very aware of your surroundings. For me, it was just about staying closer, going forward, not moving too far back, and not running. So I just used the angles, you know. I consistently move right and left.
Diana Prazik was a big hitter. I mean, she had won the title
right.
by a vicious knockout.
She did, yeah. And thank goodness that girl has recovered now. She was in a coma for a bit, the girl from Sweden, Frida Wahlberg. Yeah, so she has the punch, but I wasn't intending to stand there and let her hit me, you know. So, I felt that was, you know, a ready-made fight for me because, you know, the styles make the fights. And I'm a boxer, and somebody who's coming to punch is always going to make me look better as a boxer.
Yeah. You fought all over the world. I mean, what was your favorite country to fight in?
Oh, wow. That's a tough question. I really felt great in South Africa. They gave us the world-class treatment. You know, everything. They treat you as a champion. And when we went to Tokyo, Japan, too, it was pretty awesome, and New Zealand. If I had to pick a favorite, it's tough. It's tough. I take something from each of those places and, you know, have a lot of great memories of all of them. Canada, you know, Canada was okay, but I've been in Canada before, so it wasn't a huge thing, you know what I mean? But New Zealand was awesome. I mean, different culture. South Africa was the best, yeah.
Believe it, did you have a question that you wanted to ask? I don't want to dominate, because I could ask ladies questions all day long.
Oh, hello, Leila. My name is Felipe. I'm the co-host here with David
hello.
On the 2 Minute Round. How are you doing today?
Good, great. Thanks for having me on.
Now, a couple questions. Going back a little bit on the Mayweather deal, you know, without going into any particulars or any big details, what kind of deal is it? I mean, how many years is the contract for? How many fights are they promising you a year?
Right.
And you know, because it is coming a little bit later in your career. They do have another woman, LaTondra Jones, but obviously you're the bigger name with the more experience. So what kind of deal did Mayweather offer you to get you to finally sign? Like you say, Luis Tapia has helped you make your career.
Right. Well, you know, the main thing was staying busy, you know, and I wanted to stay active in this last, you know, I consider this the last couple few years of my career. And so I figured if I could get some activity and stay busy and here in my hometown in Las Vegas, that would be the best, you know, and I'm hoping that they can also get me the bigger money fights with the TV. And that was the real factor there was just to get those kind of opportunities. And so they offered me 3 fights a year, 2 fights if I'm holding a title at the time. So, and that's good enough. I mean, that, you know, at this stage, that's about what I can expect. But I'm hoping for the big money fights this year and the following year with Cecilia Brakis or Erica Farias or any of the champions that want to come and fight. I'm just, looking forward to all of that.
Now, you mentioned that you're comfortable at welterweight, but you could go down as low as 140. The WBC actually has you ranked at 140, while the WBA has you at 147. So, obviously the prize, the big prize for you, the woman that you're looking for is Breakhouse. But if whatever reason, like you say, she's not really looking all that forward to fighting you. So you mentioned Erika Faria.
I don't blame her.
What other names are out there that you would feel, somewhat of a challenge to face in those two weight classes?
You know, I fight anybody and everybody, and I've already fought everybody. But, any of the top champions that want to come and fight, I'm happy to fight. If Brackus wants to keep avoiding me, we can definitely fight Farias at 140 if she's interested. Or any, I don't know who else is out there in and around my weight, but, bring them all. Bring them on.
I mean, I'm sure you've tried in the past. But is there any way that you can somewhat force the fight against Breakhouse, as part of the sanctioning bodies, I mean,
not
you've been
really.
A veteran. Yeah.
Yeah, not really. I think that, it's very political, and she's the one obviously staying busy and paying sanction fees. So, they're happy, Showtime is very interested in making the fight happen. The president of the Showtime Championship Boxing, Steven Espinoza, expressed a real interest to make that fight happen this year. But he can't force Brackus to get in the ring with me. So, we'll give it our best shot with Mayweather behind me and with the TV. And if that doesn't happen, I'm happy to fight at 140. Right now, as we speak, I'm like 141 and a half today. So, yeah, no problem. 140, even 135, I can go back to lightweight. So
now,
yeah, so from 135 to 154, whatever. So,
but now, you've seen it all, in like you mentioned, almost 20 years as a professional. You fought all the names. You fought all over the country. You fought on TV, not on TV, pay-per-view, small little venues, big venues. So
yeah.
Now with this whole new little wave of female boxing coming up in the United States, with Showtime getting into the game and CBS Sports Network and a couple other, ESPN. Do you think that it's going to be tougher to get the A-side female fighters, the girls that are assigned to promoters, to really fight good opponents because now they're fighting on TV and they have to protect that record?
Yeah, perhaps that's going to be the case, that might be. But I think that the public will demand the best fight. So that kind of pressure, adds a little bit to it. We'll have to see. Katie Taylor, I got to say, is one of the most awesome upcoming things out there. She's incredible. I really think that girl is going to change the game. She's classy. She's a great fighter, and she's got a ton of amateur experience. And she's just, I think, one of the ones to watch out there.
I got a couple more questions. Go ahead, David.
I also heard that Clarissa Shields was even asking to fight you. I was kind of shocked by that, but I'm also impressed, by the fact that she has so much confidence in herself. What did you think about that, Leila, when you heard your name mentioned by Clarissa?
I did not hear that. Did she say my name?
Yeah, she said she would challenge Layla McCarter if they
really
were the best fighter.
Oh, I missed that. I totally missed that because I was kind of saying something similar after her last fight. I'm not super impressed, she's a good fighter, a great amateur fighter, but she's just that. She's an amateur turning pro. And no matter how many amateur fights you have, I still think there's a big difference between being at the best of the amateurs and being the best of the professionals. So, she can take her time and she can become a great fighter.
But I think
Katie Taylor is way ahead of her.
Yeah, do you think she's adapted better to the professional ranks Katie Taylor has?
I think Katie Taylor's just a better fighter overall. She's got over 250 amateur fights.
Mm.
I know Clarissa has a bit of experience too. But I think, she trips on her ego sometimes, You can't put the horse before the cart. you know, you have to do the work and stay humble, and, you know, all that bravado gets in her way, I think. Yeah, but that's part of growing up, you know. We're all young at one point, and then we grow up.
Now, Layla, you know, you're fighting on the 29th. It's going to be televised by Fox Sports. I think it's going to be at the Palms Casino. I did a little bit of research while you were talking to David.
Oh, okay.
I think it's going to be at the Palms Casino Resort right there in Vegas on Fox Sports 1.
It could be. So, there have been various reports, either the Palms or the Sam's Town, and it's been moved back and forth, and the date has actually changed a few times as well. But
But you don't sound – and I understand me so, but you don't sound all that excited in facing Melissa Hernandez for like the fifth or sixth time in your career. So how hard is it to get up for that fight, to get excited, to get motivated, to train as hard as you need to train, to put on a great performance on TV against a fighter that she's practically part of the family now. You fought her so many times.
Yeah, I mean, we're very, very, very familiar. So it's a different thing when you're fighting somebody you've never faced before. You've got a lot of different things going through your head. You know, we're so familiar that we know what to do. We know how to fight her. The motivation factor is kind of, it's hard when you're facing somebody like that, but you always have to be on guard because, you know, you screw up once and they get one in on you, just like what happened in our second fight. You know, I think maybe I took her a little lightly in our second fight, and I had some things going on, and my focus wasn't where it should have been. So I want to make sure that I never make that same mistake again. You know, and that's my focus each and every time I get in the ring.
Yeah, a lot of people
but
don't
am
know
I thrilled?
She was the last person to beat you.
She was, and I was the last person to beat her as well, so it makes a nice, you know, thing. But, yeah, I'm not super excited or whatever, but, you know, it's another fight, and to stay busy, and this is what we had to do just to get an opponent. You know, we searched far and wide. We had Chris Namu from Uruguay, but she was waiting. She was taking another fight at the time, and we never got the contract to her in the right time. And so that we lost that fight. And also she couldn't get the visa in time. So, yeah, we'll probably fight her in the near future.
Now, you're going to be 38 years old in about 6 days, so happy early birthday from here.
Oh, thank you.
Around.
Dang it, I almost forgot.
But, you know, you're coming up on 38. How much longer does the female fight world have Layla MacArthur inside a ring?
Well, at least I think I got a good couple of years left. And then I kind of would like to see the end of it. I'm hoping to make some money fights happen and some TV fights and, you know, move forward into a different arena. You know, this is my best chance that I have to make something of, you know, with all the TV exposure coming out and the money. If I can't do it now, then, you know, we hang it up. Either way, I think it's done in probably 2 or 3 years, maybe.
Layla, you've seen the women's fight world for the last couple of decades. Who are some of the current fighters now that you kind of like to see or hear about in the fight
like
game?
I said, the one that really gets me excited, I mean, of course, is Katie Taylor. I think she's pretty phenomenal. And she's just turning pro and looking like an established, you know, I think she could beat a lot of the top ones up there. You know, and as Mayweather is working with Hearns from England, they're doing some business together, so you never know where that might lead. I mean, you know, I can be a lightweight, so you never know. And then Amanda Serrano is pretty awesome, too. I like watching her. She's exciting, and, you know, I fought her sister before. And they're pretty nice people, too, so I like Amanda Serrano. I haven't seen too much else out there lately.
Okay.
I know in Mexico there's been a lot of fights, you know, the WBC in Mexico has been keeping women busy. My only problem with them is they don't want to do 3-minute rounds for the women, and that really bothers me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's why I've never fought for the
WBC.
Yeah.
You were one of the first were you the first to do a world title fight at 3-minute rounds?
I think so. We did the first 3-minute round, 10-round title fight with Belinda Lara Quinte. I don't think it was the first, though. I think in the 1970s there were a few, And I don't know on the world title fights or not, but I know there was actually a few 15-round fights as well, fought at three-minute rounds, so those had to be title fights. So there's been a few. But I was the only one with the WBA approved. You know, we got the WBA to approve it, the GBU, and a few other organizations are definitely willing. The only one that's really against it 100% is the WBC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were just going to talk about that, too, because they came out with an edict saying that they'll never put three-minute rounds on a WBC-sanctioned fight.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. I mean, and, you know, the science, you know, in quotes, that they cite is just ridiculous. It's the things that kept women from boxing in the first place when they banned women's boxing, you know.
Exactly.
Same exact reasons, you know. They have PMS, and they don't run marathons as fast, and a layer of fat, and just a bunch of gibberish, you know. There's science on any side of an issue that you choose to use. But they've already have their mindset against it, so there's nothing you can say to convince them. And I hope that changes. You know, I think they're on the wrong side of it.
Yeah, I agree totally.
Women's boxing should be mandatory three-minute rounds. If you can't hack it, don't do it. You know, this is a professional sport. We're not doing tough man competition or whatever. The MMA girls started, right, doing the same as the men, five-minute rounds.
Exactly.
Amateur boxing is
rounds.
Now for the women the same as the men, three-minute rounds or four-three-minute rounds, whatever it is. It's the same as men now. You know, other than that, they wear headgear now, but it's just, you know, one thing at a time. We need to, you know, get rid of these archaic policies against females.
Yep. Yeah, I'm with you.
Unnecessary
and
demeaning.
That's something that we have to take a real good look at and maybe raise the issue up there.
Yeah, and the thing is, the people that make these kind of policies aren't thinking about athletes, you know, they're thinking about maybe the women they know in their own lives and, you know, people that are different kind of people. You know, they maybe haven't known female athletes, haven't seen female athletes, and yet they're willing to put rules upon what they're capable of doing without even knowing. You know, I just say stand back and let us show you. You know, get out of the way. You know, I don't know why these people are in charge of what we do. But, you know, that's the way of the world.
Do you think that you yourself have been able to change the mind of a lot of people that used to oppose female boxing, or are some of those people just hopeless? Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, there's been a lot that are just hopeless and refuse to open their eyes and accept it, but, you know, or refuse to watch even. But I've changed quite a few minds in my career personally. My old promoter, Frank Luca, wasn't sure about female boxing, but after he put me on the first show, he was fully convinced, and we fought the main event there many, many, many times at the Orleans Casino. We were his headline for 2 or 3 years there. And, you know, him and many, many other people. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we change a few minds. We should take comfort in that. And, you know, don't worry about the ones that we can't, because, you know, they're hopeless, like you said.
Yeah, exactly. So
I know you've talked
fight?
To talk aside to from, a few.
Aside from Cecilia Brekens, what's your dream fight? Or,
yes.
Is there a particular place you'd like to fight at? Or
Las Vegas, ideally. But, you know, anywhere. I'll go anywhere. You know I go anywhere to fight. But I would really like that fight to be on a big venue in Las Vegas, Nevada. A big show, big TV. Yeah, exactly what it deserves. You know, that kind of fight is a huge fight. You know, and getting the right pay and everything, that would be a dream come true. You know, it's a dream right now, but hopefully we see it come true.
Yeah, it's hopefully it does happen.
Yeah, I mean, she's the unified welterweight champion. I'm the number one. What could be better? I mean, it's just great. That would be great, you know, and she's kind of the new school. I mean, I'm the old school, but I'm still here and I'm still doing it at the level I've always been. So let's see what she can do.
And you're basically the same age, too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, people want to estimate me older than I am because I've been around so long, but I started young. I was, you know, I've seen so many careers start and end since I've been here. And it's just been a really great journey.
And we had Luis on the show early on, about a year ago. and you weren't able to make it. And he talked about all the experiences that you guys had together. And you've been with him for as a trainer for what?
17 years.
15 years. 17 years. Wow.
Yeah, more than 17 years we've been together, and he's my rock, you know. He's just been the man who made my career, the one who trained me and taught me and made me think better and be better. And I mean, I owe so much to Luis that you don't even know, you know. I mean, my life, basically. He's been a big force in my life.
Very good trainer. Yep. Very good trainer.
Yeah, he's the best. I mean, yeah, I couldn't have done it without him. It's just... Yep, and I always forget to thank him in the most crucial moments, too. I'm glad you brought him up because, you know, I never give this guy enough credit. I take it for granted because, you know, he's just like, it's like saving the best for last. You know, I get in the speech and I'm like, you know, but he's the most important one I have to thank in my career.
Yeah, he's a great trainer. I mean, all the stuff that he's taught you, it's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, and he's a head doctor. He'll get inside your head. I mean, any of his fighters, Friday Ahunanya, my teammate, other fighters that he's had, I mean, they can tell you it's not just about boxing. It's about getting in the head and making them believe, you know, and be stronger in the head. And, you know, he's a master at that, you know. Yep.
Okay. Well, David, on behalf of the 2-Minute Round, Layla, we would like to thank you for coming
thank
on
you.
The air with us. And we wish you all the luck in the world on the 29th. And hopefully later on
anytime.
This year we could have you on again and talk about any new things in your career.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for everything, and talk to you soon.
All right. Good
night. Thank you, Layla.
Bye-bye.
And there you have it, folks. Layla MacArthur, recent signee to none other than Mayweather Promotions. She's going to be fighting on the 29th against a very, very familiar foe, Melissa Hernandez. We get the exclusive here on the 2-Minute Round. It's going to be out of Las Vegas. Obviously, as you guys heard, she was looking for any other opponent but Melissa. Melissa, a fighter that actually had...
Very good.
Very good fighter. She had actually announced her retirement. But, obviously, the thought of facing her old foe, Layla MacArthur, once again, inside a ring, was enough to get her to strap on the gloves once again. So, they're basically the... modern era female Sugar Ray Robinson and Jake LaMotta, right?
Yeah, very correct.
Yeah, fighting all those times. So moving on to the rest of our results here on the 2-Minute Round, your 25th edition, 25 times we've been on the Leave It in the Ring Network talking about all things female boxing. On Saturday, April 8th, from the Oasis Hotel in Cancun, Mexico, Promociones del Pueblo again gave us on Televisa another televised female fight in Mexico between Yesenia Gomez, highly ranked by the WBC, facing Jackie Calvo in a six-rounder at flyweight. The fight ended up a draw. Scores were 57-56 for each, and an even 57-57. I actually watched this fight, and I scored it, and I saw Jackie Calvo win this fight nearly. I saw her win 4-2, and she scored a somewhat of a controversial knockdown in the first round. She stepped on her foot accidentally and punched her at the same time, and Gomez went down. So technically, I mean, the ref could have called it a slip, but technically she still got punched while she got stepped on, and she went down, and they counted it as a knockdown. So actually, I had Calvos winning 4-2 with the knockdown. So I don't see what the judges were seeing in scoring this fight a draw. Did you get a chance to see this fight, David?
No, I didn't. I wasn't able to see that fight.
On the same night, on April 8th, Saturday, from the Manchester Arena in the UK, Nicola Adams, a former Olympian, made her much-awaited debut, scoring a unanimous decision against Virginia Noemi Carcamo in a four-rounder at flyweight. Scores were 36 times. You got to watch that fight, right?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
What did you think of this Nicola Adams?
Well... I can see, I mean, she's definitely very athletic, and I'm just puzzled to see how it will translate in the flyweight division as a pro.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I'm with you. I wasn't all that impressed. I mean, She didn't look like anything out of the ordinary. You know, she just looked like another pro debuter. I didn't really see like this huge Olympic pedigree from what I saw inside the ring. As the fight got older and we went into the third and fourth round, she did look a little bit more, you know, more than what I thought I should be seeing, but it wasn't all that much more. So with that said, David, fairly quickly, of all the former Olympians that we've seen go pro in the last year, which have been about four, Shields, Taylor, Marlene Esparza, and Nicola Adams, rank them in the order that you see the best potential, the most potential out of each fighter. You know, who do you see as the best fighter out of those four?
Well, potentially, I see Clarissa Shields as the best potentially. I think, like Layla Bacardo was saying, she's still young, she's still learning, and she's still a beast, and she's going to get better. Whereas Katie Taylor's already in her 30s, early 30s, and she's great already. You know, she is great. I agree with that too. But I think that, you know, she's only going to go so far. She's going to hit that plateau very quickly. But Clarissa, I think, is going to go beyond it. I could be wrong. I could be wrong completely. And Katie Taylor just remains a force for the next 10 years. Because right now, athletically, she is, and combined with her skills, she's got the whole boat. She got everything. And Clarissa, I think, is going to gain all that skill, professional skill, to go along with her athleticism.
So you see as Clarissa Shields as number one, you see Katie Taylor as number two. So who do you see number three, Esparza or Nicola Adams?
Adams, definitely Adams.
Wow. And then you see the better of the in the fourth. You see Esparza. I'm actually gonna disagree with you. I think Katie Taylor out of the four shows the best potential. Mm-hmm. I like Clarissa Shields, but I think that Katie Taylor is all that much more seasoned, and that she kind of gives me an air of a, like, not so much in the style or in the power, but just the fact that she's older, she's more seasoned, she has a lot of amateurs, but she's 30 years old. She kind of gives me like a Gennady Golovkin type of air, where, you know, it doesn't matter that she's in her 30s, she's in her young 30s, hasn't seen anything, and, you know, she's been dominating every good opponent. She's being brought up the right way. She's being kept busy, very busy. She's fighting every couple of weeks, if not once a month at least. So I see Katie Taylor as the number one spot, as one of the best Olympians that we've seen go pro in the last year. I see Shields as number two. I actually see Esparza as number three, because that's how unimpressed I was by Nicola Adams. I mean, even when Mariana Juarez was on the show about a month and a half ago, and she mentioned Nicola Adams, I'm like, wow, what I want. And then when I saw that she was going to go pro, I'm like, wow, I got to see this fight. And I wasn't impressed at all. So even though Esparza didn't look that great in her pro debut, I think I got to go with her as number three and Nicola Adams as number four.
Well, one reason I picked Nicola Adams is because Virginia Cascamo is a pretty good fighter. She is pretty good. So just because of that, that could be the reason she didn't sparkle. Whereas Marlon Esparza basically had somebody could stand there, you know.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Anybody could look good. Anybody could look good against us. And I think Nicola has a little more ammunition. She has more bullets than Marlon Esparza.
Well, that might be
I could be wrong.
That may be a storyline there, because both of them are in the flyweight division. Both of them are former Olympians. You know, each one is very popular in their own right, in their own countries. Marlon Esparza here in the United States, obviously being of Mexican descent. And Nicola Adams, obviously, the UK fans are very passionate. We've seen it with Katie Taylor and now with her. So that might be something that we might be seeing in the future, and hopefully so, because that would be a big fight between two up-and-coming female fighters. Obviously not now,
But later on, when it means something, when one of them has a title, or they could be fighting for some kind of title. Also, on Saturday, April 8th, from Argentina, veteran Alejandra Olivares scored a unanimous decision over Leslie Morales in a 10-rounder at 130 pounds. Scores were 190 two times and 189. Two things that I found interesting in this fight. Alejandra Olivares, you know, moving down to 130 pounds. Usually she had been campaigning at 140, but she went down to 130, but didn't look all that much smaller. She's a big, muscular woman, and she didn't look like 130 pounders. She looked much bigger than that. And second, being that this fight was held in Argentina, which is considered one of the female boxing superpowers, along with perhaps Mexico, obviously, and Japan and Germany, and that Alejandra Olivares is a force to be reckoned with in that country. I'm not sure if you got to watch the stream of this fight, David, but the production value of this fight card was horrendous. I mean, it was dark. I was shocked that Alejandra Olivares was fighting in this kind of venue and with that kind of production value. I thought she would have more respect from that country and from the TV networks in that country. Better than this.
Yeah, you should read the story by Diego Uria, who's our staff writer for the Prize Fighters, and he covered that fight, and he kind of mentioned that the place was not really built for boxing. The ring was horrible, the lighting was horrible, and there was even questions on whether or not she really made the weight. There was a lot of He did a pretty good article without saying that everything was crooked. Basically,
I'm gonna
he just
catch
said that there are a lot of curious factors.
I saw the article. I didn't get a chance to read it, but now that you mentioned it, I want to make my way and read that article because I did find it very interesting, those two facts. And the opponent, Leslie Morales from Mexico, she was very, very overweight. I mean, at 130 pounds, she's probably a natural bantamweight. You know, because she looked very, very overweight. And I found it surprising that despite of that, she actually went the 10 rounds with Morales, I mean, with Olivera, who, if you ever seen this woman, she is huge. You know, she's huge. She has huge arms, huge back. Like you mentioned, she might have not made the weight, so she was probably coming in there even heavier, and she wasn't able to knock her out. So I found that very surprising. And lastly, on Sunday, April 9th, from the Novo in L.A., Ringside Sports, Richard Schaefer gave us the return of former super middleweight international WBC champion Maricela Cornejo, scoring a unanimous decision over Sidney LeBlanc in a 6-rounder at super middleweight. Scores there were 60-54 two times and 59-55. After the fight, Cornejo stated that this has been her best performance. This was her first fight, I believe, under the tutelage of veteran trainer Joel Diaz out in Indio, California. Cornejo also mentioned in this interview that I caught that she is moving to Indio, California to be closer to her camp. She was living in L.A., and now she's going to move about two and a half hours east, right, David, to
yes.
Indio?
It's about 2 hours. 2 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's going to be moving out there to be closer to her camp and that she expects bigger and better things for herself. Also, she mentioned that she was willing to fight, you know, Clarissa Shields fairly quickly here. And Clarissa Shields took umbrage to that and said, you know, it doesn't matter if we fight today, tomorrow, or next year, you're never going to beat me. So like Layla McCarthy said, you know, sometimes Clarissa Shields lets her ego get in front of her. Where with Maricela Cornejo, obviously that would be a big fight because of the popularity of the two. Cornejo is one of the more popular female fighters in the United States, right up there with Amanda Serrano and Clarissa Shields. So tell us your thoughts on this fight, David. What did you learn from this fight? I believe you spoke to Richard Schaefer, who recently signed Maricela Cornejo to his Ringside Sports company. So what can you tell us about this fight with Cornejo and LeBlanc?
Well, Cornejo, she training with Joel Diaz seemed to be a big difference for her. I'm not trying to downgrade the previous trainer, but in this fight, She said she was in the best shape she had ever been, and that basically the reason she won so handily was the other girl gassed out. And she said that it was just a matter of her having more fuel than the other girl, and she was able to go full blast, 90 miles an hour, where the other girl had to slow down. And Cornejo was very pleased. She was very pleased. I think that's why she's going to make the move to India. And she's got offers from everybody. She's got Christina Hammer wants to fight her, Clarissa Shields wants to fight her, and she's basically in a really good position. And now that she's with Schaefer, she's with somebody who could actually put her in a big venue. I think the possibilities of her fighting those two girls and even others is very good, because she's in a position of power right now. It's great. And Schaefer says he wants to put women on television. That's his goal, to put them on television, not just put them on fight cards like this last one. This last fight was not televised, but in the future, he wants to put them on television.
Now, is Schaefer, is he looking to do these type of cards here at this venue? This venue, one that has not been used for boxing previously, then actually doing it on a Sunday afternoon. You were there at the fight. What did you think of the whole setup with the venue, the fact that it was on a Sunday afternoon, the two main event fights with Alejandro Luna and Josecito Lopez, respectively, were televised by Fox Sports. But
right.
What did Schaefer tell you about the venue, and if he's going to continue, kind of like maybe mirror the Belasco Theater stuff and maybe put some female fights there?
Well, actually, they did have fights in that place before. It was only under a different name. It was called Club Nokia.
Oh, okay.
And
okay,
that's
okay.
In Golden Boy.
Yeah,
Golden Boy put like many shows there, but then they lost it to MMA. MMA outbid them, and then I guess they wanted boxing again, and they gave them a good offer, so they put it
there.
Yeah,
I remember that venue.
Yeah, it was packed. It was a packed house, a little rowdy. The crowd was a little rowdy, but it was full. It was very full on a Sunday night. And I think they had a little too many fights, which is common in Tijuana. Tijuana will have like 20, 30 fights.
Yeah, 15,
but,
10, 12.
Yeah, they had about 10 in L.A. on Sunday. And
wow.
That was a lot. Yeah, so I think that's the reason they weren't all televised. And then the main events all went the whole 10 rounds in some very slow fights. I think if they want to spruce up the fight show, they better put women in there on television because the fights were pretty boring. The mid fights were pretty boring.
But did Schaefer mention that he was going to keep using the same venue, or he's going to look for other spots as well?
No, this was basically, he said he was going to put fight cards there, but he's going to be working in Vegas too. Vegas and other cards, not just L.A., but they'll be looking around.
Okay. Well, moving on to our female fight chatter. First off, we want to start off with sending a warm hug to top contender Amariz Quintana from San Diego, who's recuperating from a serious operation last week to remove a cyst on her heart. She's at home already recuperating. She has posted a couple times on Facebook thanking everybody for worrying about her and praying for her. And here at the 2-minute round, we want to send her a warm hug and a fast recovery. So hopefully we get to see her back in the ring soon. Amariz, the Diamond Girl Quintana from here nearby San Diego, who is getting over a little bit of a medical issue this last week. Now, with only weeks to go into her proposed April 22nd fight against Eva Piaskowska, former champ Mikaela Loren announced her opponent had pulled out of the fight because of an injury. Loren was very upset of it, but despite of that, Loren stated her promoter team, Sauerland, is looking for a suitable opponent for the same date, which is April 22nd. So I also believe that she's part of a Dancing with the Stars type of thing out there in Sweden, her home country. You know, I didn't know she was like, she's like 41 years old. She doesn't look 41 years old, this Mikaela Loren.
Yeah,
I didn't know she was that old.
Yeah, she's a pretty. She's been around. But let's keep in shape. You look good.
Yeah. WBC Super Flyweight Champion Selena Munoz will defend her title for the 11th time in Cancun, although an opponent or date was not mentioned. She did mention the name of Eva Naranjo as a possible opponent, while also stating this year that Eva Naranjo is from Spain. And she also mentioned that she'll be moving up to bantamweight, giving the opportunity to perhaps seeing the much-anticipated fight between her and Mariana Juarez. That fight, they've been circling each other for quite some time, especially when they were in the 115-pound division. Selena Munoz being the WBC Super Flyweight champion. I believe Mariana Juarez at one point was the silver champion, and obviously that would make it so that they would fight each other. But for whatever reason, money issues, you know, ego issues, both of them thought they were the A side. The fight didn't materialize, and Mariana Juarez ended up moving to 118 pounds. Now she's a WBC bantamweight champion, and if Selena Munoz is moving up this year to that same division, I am sure she's going to be looking for an opportunity for a world title, and being that she will defend the WBC 115-pound title for the 11th time soon, I'm sure she's going to be looking for the WBC title as well at bantamweight, and well, she would have to get in the ring with Mariana Juarez. I think that's an explosive fight. Hopefully we see it by the end of the year. David?
Yeah, I know that Mariana really wanted a fighter, and she just gave up and decided to move up to bantamweight since she couldn't get that fight. So I would be surprised if Mariana fights her now. I think there may be like a vindictiveness toward that. And
I
she
think
wasn't able to fight her.
I think that maybe she will fight her if the terms are completely in her favor. You know that she's definitely the A-side, which she would be because she is the champion. And Selena Munoz will be coming up. Maybe the last time when she's still the super flyweight champion and they were trying to make the fight, maybe Juarez was kind of trying to impose her weight a little bit. And Munoz being the champion, maybe she felt she needed more respect. But now if she goes up to 118 and Juarez is the champion, then Juarez should be getting everything she wants because not only is she the bigger name fighter, but she's also the champion of the division. So I think that they would face each other if all the terms and all the factors are in Juarez's corner.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I know that Jackie Nava gets first crack probably.
Yeah.
And who knows what will happen in that fight because that'll be a huge fight.
Yeah, that's true. Now, starting tomorrow in New York City at the legendary Gleason's Gym, the 7th all-female boxing clinic will be held. The clinic will run until Sunday with seminars and culminating with an all-female boxing show, an amateur, but it will be an all-female amateur boxing show this weekend in New York City at Gleason's Gym. If you want more information regarding that, I'm sure you can visit their website or look for them on Facebook. It's the 7th annual. And I'm sure in there you'll see Alicia Ashley, you'll see Heather Hardy, you'll see a bunch of other names, maybe even Amanda Serrano and Laura Serrano, even though I don't think they train at that gym, but, you know, they're around there and they're good friends with all those other fighters that do train at Gleason's Gym. So hopefully if you guys are in the area and you want to check that out, it'll be all weekend long this weekend in New York City. Now, moving on to a couple of articles that we mentioned earlier in the show in our interview with Layla MacArthur. The bigger one is that the WBC, the World Boxing Council, one of the big four sanctioning bodies. And in my opinion, the one that really supports female boxing the most out of the four, if you want to be quite honest. I mean, it's the only one that has an all-female boxing convention. They've had them 2 years in a row. The first one was in Cancun. The second one was here in Tijuana, with the third one postponed. It was supposed to be in March, but now it has been postponed and they have not given any information just yet. Also, I think it was the first of the four sanctioning bodies that actually crowned a female champion, right, in Jackie Nava. So it was the first of the four. But like Layla MacArthur mentioned in our interview some minutes ago, is that one that in a certain way holds women back, because despite all those things that they've done for female boxing, it is the one sanctioning body that is completely 100% adamant in not allowing their world champions to fight for longer than 2 minute rounds or more than 10 rounds. A report recently came out of the UK, the United Kingdom, that they are considering allowing women to box for more than 2 minutes, basically 3 minutes, just like the men in professional fights. And Suleiman, in his weekly column that he writes, called the 12th round, adamantly was against that. And he's stating that the reason that they've done it is that in reports that they've had commissioned, and by they I mean the WBC, they've found through medical research, according to them, that that it's more dangerous for females to fight longer periods of time, being 3 minutes or longer than 10 rounds. They think that they actually post in this article that there's an easy formula of why they would not allow it, which would be dehydration plus fatigue plus a strong punch equals a possible tragedy. So basically they're saying, yeah.
Only women can do this. Only women can suffer that, right?
Yeah, because men obviously get dehydrated as well. Obviously, men also get fatigue, and obviously, men also can suffer a strong punch from the opponent. And we've seen those tragedies inside the ring in male fights. Fortunately, I don't think we've ever seen a female fighter suffer any real tragedies like a coma or, God forbid, a death.
Was it 2 years ago? A woman in Africa died. South Africa. Yeah, she did pass away.
So the WBC, and I quote, says the WBC would never allow 3 minute rounds and will never allow any fight over 10 rounds. This will limit the dehydration and the fatigue elements to lower as much as possible the risk of tragedy. And that is a quote from the WBC. Now, another article also that came out recently, actually on ESPN, it was announced that former I think it was Great Britain boxer Natasha Jones has confirmed she's making a comeback as a professional and wants to avenge her 2012 Olympic defeat to Katie Taylor. She's from Liverpool. She's a five-time national champion, but was edged by Ireland Taylor, because Katie Taylor is Irish, in the quarterfinals at the 2012 London Olympics. She announced her retirement 3 years ago, but Jonas is preparing to fight again, having watched Taylor and another Olympic champion, flyweight Nicola Adams, take their bows in the paid ranks. She's saying the opportunity is now here. 3 years ago, it wasn't. Now things are different. She has been speaking to Eddie Hearn of Matchroom Boxing and Frank Warren out there. So maybe she's going to be signing with the promoter fairly quickly. She's being trained by Joe Gallagher, who is the 2015 Ring Magazine Trainer of the Year. So it looks like she's putting a pretty good team around her, and we might be seeing another former Olympian stepping into the ring as a professional. What do you know about this Natasha Jonas, David?
You know, it's been so long. I know that she, you know, she was a good fighter, but I don't remember much about it because it's been a while. It's been a while since I saw those amateur bouts that they had in the British Commonwealth. So I couldn't really tell you.
Okay, so let's keep an eye on her and see what happens and see how soon she does her pro review. And lastly, in the female fight chatter, I want to bring your attention to an article written on Rolling Stone. I'm not sure if it came out in the actual magazine, but I think it was posted on their website. And it's on Heather Hardy, the 126-pound WBC international champion from Brooklyn. Obviously, a very popular fighter here in the United States. And it's a very, very good article. It talks about her plight, talks about her being a single parent and all she has to do to step into the ring. But my question here, David, is, you know, you're a writer. You've been writing for a long time. I'm a writer. I've been writing for a fairly long time, obviously not as long as you. And one thing that they teach us in writing is that you have to fact check. And now with the advent of the internet, which has been, you know, in existence for, I would say, over 20 years, it's not very tough to actually do a lot of fact checking, especially in a story about a female fighter. you know? And I find it hard to believe that a writer for Rolling Stone or even the whole Rolling Stone magazine or website doesn't have fact checkers that can verify three claims that they make in this article. The first one states, Hardy is the first woman to sign a long-term contract, quote, with, in parentheses, with promoter Lou DiBella. So I don't know if they're saying that she was the first one to sign a long-term contract in general, which is obviously not true, or is she the first one to sign a long-term contract with Lou DiBella, which that may be true. That might be the first. She might be the first fighter that Lou DiBella, female fighter that Lou DiBella has signed to a long-term contract. But as far as her being the first woman to sign a long-term contract with any promoter, obviously that's not true. I mean, there's tons of female fighters out there with five-year contracts, and she's not the first. The other claim here is the first to fight at Barclays Center, which is probably true that she was the first female fighter to fight at Barclays Center, and the first to appear along with Shelley Vincent in a televised fight, and that is clearly not true. We've seen a ton of women fight on TV before Heather Hardy, including, you know, Christy Martin and our very own Elena Baby Doll Reed and many others. So I think they needed to clarify those three claims a little bit better so that way, you know, their story could have a little bit more more truth in it.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't read the story.
It's a good story. I sent it to you. Give it a read because I was pretty impressed by the story. So now in our last section here of the 2 Minute Round, our 25th edition here on the Leave It in the Ring Network, your Hooks and Jabs look at the female fight world. We're going to move on to the upcoming calendar, which is a very short one. It's probably the shortest one of the year so far, David, but we do have some very important fights coming up. They're all going to happen on one. Yeah, big fights. They're all going to happen on one night, on the same night, which is Saturday, April 22nd, which is a week from this Saturday. Starting off from Metepec, Mexico, in Promociones del Pueblo on Televisa, it's going to give us the first fight of the semifinals of that WBC Diamond 112-pound tournament between current WBC junior flyweight champion Ivette La Roca Zamora facing Esmeralda Moreno in a 10-rounder considered an eliminator for the WBC flyweight title. It's not the first time they faced. They faced each other before with Zamora winning the fight, and now they're facing each other again, and I think it's going to be one of the best fights of the year. This has fight of the year written all over it, and I can't wait for it. So this is going to be a great fight. It's going to be fought at 112 pounds, which is a weight class that Moreno has been campaigning in, and it's going to be, in my opinion, the bigger women in there. But Ivette La Roca Zamora, I mean, she's experienced, she's tough, she's seasoned, she's a world champion. So we're going to see, and she has a win over her already, over Moreno, which gives her a little bit of confidence. So we're going to see a great, great fight in Mexico on April 22nd. The same night, we already mentioned it, Micaela Loren will be facing the always dangerous Tiffany Beth Anderson in a 6-rounder at 154 pounds. So we're going to wait and see who she ends up facing on April 22nd. She's adamant of fighting that night. She's in shape after Eva Piatkowska ended up bailing out because of injury. The same night from the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York, on DiBella Entertainment, Amanda Serrano will be going after her 5th title in as many divisions when she faces Dagiana Santana in a 10-rounder for the vacant WBO bantamweight title. David, why isn't this fight being televised, at least by Showtime Extreme?
Well, I'm shocked, too. I mean, this is a historic moment. I mean, kind of moments don't happen. I don't know why not televise this fight. Amanda Serrano's proven to be one of the most electrifying female fighters today. She's fighting a multi-champion in Dayana Santana, who I've seen fight many times at heavier weights. And she's a tough girl. So, but this is a fight, I mean, they should have shown. I don't know why they're not showing it. I thought for sure they would.
At least on Showtime Extreme. And I find it hard to believe also why it's not being televised, because when we have Steven Espinosa here, he basically, I mean, he didn't officially say it, but he kind of gave us the impression that the cornerstone of their female boxing program is Amanda Serrano because of her style, because of what she's done inside the sport, because her willingness to fight anybody, and the fact that she's going for her fifth title in as many divisions, I thought that would be big enough for them to at least televise it on Showtime Extreme.
Yeah, I'm shocked. I'm shocked that it's not happening. The only thing I can question think as a reason why it's not being televised is maybe because Diana's never fought as a bantamweight.
Mm.
Maybe they're worried about her making the weight. And because I don't remember her fighting as a bantamweight. She was always a super bantamweight or a featherweight. And now she's going to drop all the way down to 118. Maybe that there was a concern. Maybe there's a concern the fight wouldn't even take place. But I know Amanda's going to be in shape. She'll be ready to go.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that's enough of a reason of why not to show the fight on air. Even if she ends up knocking her out, what's wrong in that? I mean, you show a great knockout on TV, and if it's not going to be on the regular Showtime, you know what? Let me check something real quick because we might be talking out of turn here because it might not even be a Showtime program. Oh yeah, it is on Showtime. Yeah, the main event is Sean Porter against Andre Berto. They're gonna have Jermell Charlo against Charles Hadley and Amanda Serrano against Diana Santana. But as far as we've heard and seen, this fight is not gonna be televised. So yeah, more than likely could have been televised on Showtime Extreme. Maybe it will, and they're just gonna surprise us. Because also on the card is going to be the heavyweight Luis Ortiz, and I'm sure they're going to want to televise that, at least on Showtime Extreme. So we'll see. We'll see. Maybe we get a glimpse of it on Showtime Extreme on April 22nd. And lastly, on the same day from Argentina, Jessica Tutti Bob will be defending her WBA junior flyweight title against, fellow countrywoman Luna Del Mar Torroba in a 10-rounder, obviously, for the WBA junior flyweight title. That's Jessica Tutti Bob in Argentina, quite possibly one of the most popular fighters out of that country. So, with
yes.
that said, go ahead, David.
Oh, no, excuse me.
Now, with that said, we have come to the end of the 25th edition of the 2-Minute Round, your Hooks and Jabs look at the female fight world. Before we go, we urge you and we invite you to become a Patreon of Leave It in the Ring Network, where we bring you the next round every Monday. Every Wednesday, you have the flagship show, Leave It in the Ring. And every other Thursday, you have this show, the 2-Minute Round, which is all about female boxing. Today, we had a special, very special guest, Layla MacArthur, with us. And being a member of Patreon would help us continue to bring you these type of shows. And our next show is scheduled for April 27th. Which we're going to be giving you the fight results of the calendar we just gave you, as well as any other news and the upcoming calendar from there. So, David, why don't you say goodbye to the audience?
Well, so long, everybody, and have a good weekend, and hopefully we can see Amanda Serrano fight.
Yeah, hopefully we get to, maybe they come to their senses and they at least announce it's going to be on Showtime Extreme. But from everybody here on the Leave It in the Ring Network, and especially on the 2-Minute Round, we want to wish you a happy Easter, and we'll see you on August 27th. Good night.
Good night.
This is your captain speaking. I'd like to welcome you on board today's flight. As we're currently behind schedule, we're going to skip all the pre-flight checks and just proceed with takeoff. I've given the tires a kick, and I think we've got enough fuel to get there, and the oil warning light hasn't come on yet, so buckle up and enjoy the flight.
You wouldn't fly without the proper checks, so why drive without them? Highways England recommends you check your tires, fuel, and oil before every long journey. For more information on vehicle safety checks, search Think.